program in all the different tanks. It's a little bit hard to see here, but there is updates in the lighter colors of the current state of the program, the number of tanks, what their current status is. And you can see where SWPF is under construction off to the right hand side there, and I'm not just talking about that. I will mention a couple of key points. ARPMCU, the interim salt waste treatment facility, is actually doing a remarkable job for us. It's well past its design life. It was designed for a 4-year time frame at 1 million gallon a year capacity. It's well past that. We've already gone through one life cycle extension, and we're planning on one every 4 years. And continue to include demonstrations in the utilization of the facility. So not only trying to continuously improve its performance and improve its availability, but also to improve its performance and understand what changes could be made in the flow sheet that could then potentially impact salt waste processing in the future when a large facility comes online. So an example of that is traditionally in the first few years of operation, the facility had about a 40% availability rate. It never did early on reach its 1 million gallon design capacity because of its low integrated availability rate. Last year, we managed to get it up to into the 60s, and we just concluded a time period where we reached a number of operating records for the site, for the system. It included longest duration of run in its history, maximum volume processed in a month, greatest weekly output. So we hit a number of critical factors. Included in one of those is a 250,000 gallon a month run rate, which is significant when you start talking about can you keep up, can you achieve the kind of throughput that we're really looking for going into the future. We also have the other facilities listed up there in terms of their status. We're going to hit 4,000 canisters in the vitrification facility sometime in June. Looking forward to that. It gets us close to the halfway mark. We tend to celebrate every time we hit a 1,000 can increment. And you can see that we've got a couple of tanks that are clean and ready to go, working on all the final preparations for isolation and grouting and the regulatory approvals that we need to go through. So we're well on track to meet the commitment date for tank 16, and tank 12 is running behind that. What I wanted to focus on today, though, was then how does that all tie with the salt waste processing facility? We've got, as you might imagine, quite a few things to close the loop on. When you look at all the dotted lines that are up there and you start thinking about the capacities that salt waste processing facility is going to run, that's very different than what we're doing today. And so there's quite a bit of scope of work across a wide variety of facilities that needs to be performed and completed in time, both physical modifications to the plant as well as the amount of processing that has to go on. And so I've got a slide in here on processing that needs to be achieved, but I've also got just the physical constraints. So spread out over our several hundred acre site, most of the work is in our H, S, and Z area facilities, and you can see a number of different scopes of work that have been listed here. I'm going to go through them in a little bit more detail, but the bottom line is we have to be able to send the waste over at a higher rate. We've got to do the tie-in so that they can actually connect the facilities together. We need to then be able to receive a higher volume of waste back and deal with that higher volume. It also has more radioactivity in it than what we've been dealing with in the past, and we have to have disposal facilities capable of taking the waste at the pace that we're going to bring it on. So class waste storage capacity, salt, stone disposal facility capacity, etc. Some of these are already complete and behind us. Some are well on their way, and we're making good progress. and some have yet to be started. And I'm going to show you a timeline on how well that comes together here in just a minute. A little bit more detail. So here's some of the things that have been completed to date. We've already got a whole tank down at our effluent treatment facility. That's our low-level waste effluent headed off-site that we do final finishing treatment on. We finished that up actually a couple of years ago. We've also got salt solution receipt tanks that are constructed and going through commissioning testing as we speak. So we're making really good progress there. We've also got a lot of designs and a lot of concepts pulled together. Design's obviously a little bit further along than some of the conceptuals. We're actually working on some of the long-term outage tie-in parameters that we've got to work with. We're going to have to take facilities offline long enough to do some of the physical tie-ins and then bring them back up online. And we're doing everything we can to minimize the amount of time we have to have the facilities down and non-operational, because you'll see in a minute, we need every minute of operating time that we've got available to us to meet the need that's always coming up online. In fact, we just identified the opportunity to reduce our primary outage by about 4 to 5 months. That's from 9, so 50% reduction in the time frame is going to take to the tie-in. Gives us 4 or 5 more months of operating time, so pretty significant. A couple slides here with quite a bit more detail, and you can get some progress statements here. We're making really good progress on what we call our blended feed scope. That's where we're outfitting tanks to be able to batch up, blend, and prepare waste to be fed over to salt waste processing facility. And we're on target to be able to complete all that scope of work in the fall time frame. Salt solution and receipt tanks, that's at our salt stone facility. It gives us quite a bit more buffer capacity. These systems are all very closely coupled. And as you start adding facilities in series and you start to multiplying their availabilities together, you can very quickly get a very low availability rate or a very high one that's required. And so more buffer is always a little bit better. It's going to give us another week of capacity. And full tilt, we're in commissioning phase as we speak. We'll be bringing these tanks online in the fall time frame as well. Quite a bit of design work going on relative to what we call our east-west transfer lines. These are the actual tie-in points. A lot of the pipe on the clean side, the SWPF side, has already been laid in, and we're going to need to do the hot ties into that facility connection point. That's what we're going to call our big dig here in the future. We've got a major excavation. We've got to shore up a large-scale facility and be able to dig about 25 feet down, 100 feet across, and 50 feet wide. So it's going to be a major complex of digging to expose all the pipes that we've got to get at to be able to get a tie-in. EWPF's got to be able to take quite a bit higher activity waste stream and at much higher rates than it's currently taken. We're pretty well maxing that facility out with the pace of operations out of our interim capacity system. So at a million and a half gallon a year, we're right at the limit of that the capacity of that facility to take the waste. We've got to increase our capability to take volume, be able to size reduce that, and get it down to the point where we can get just the radioisotopics into the solution. So a lot of work going on there to really drive forward a number of modifications within the facility, some of which will, in the end, change the chemistry and the flow sheet within the facility to be able to handle the volumes that we're talking about. So that's the, in fact, that's this block right here, the alternate reductant flow sheet, would give us the capacity to take on more waste in the stream, so we're going to work on a dry frit, reduces the amount of liquid that we add to the system, so reduces the amount of evaporation. So you can see we've got several things there related just to volumes. Lab waste handling is all about the much higher waste load coming into the facility and being able to handle it through our lab system and be able to shield the waste as it's coming back out of analysis. So you can see some definition of projected time frames that we're going to be working on some of these things. And then we're going to couple up a couple of our vessels to make them unisex, if you will, be able to use them
in multiple different capacities, and that's what the last one here is.
You see three of these elements are scheduled for FY16. A little bit of a ramp up in history here. So we did about $8 million worth of project scope last year. We were scheduled for 10. We're probably going to perform 12 by the end of this year. We need to ramp up into closer to $20 million range next year. And that's actually currently on the books. I think we can get all the way to the $20 million mark. We have about $60 million worth of scope to go, including this year. So pretty significant investment for us just in the physical modifications to the facility. Along with that, just the continued operations of the interim salt treatment facility, and just continuing to try and demo new items. So as we chase off some of the bottlenecks and limiting factors, we just go to the next one, and then we demonstrate what could potentially solve that problem. So we went to next gen solvent, made a huge change in the decontamination factor that we're getting. We've not chased the higher volume throughput because it turned out that the next thing in line was filtration is our bottleneck. So we started chasing bottleneck through our filtration system. Tom's absolutely right. We dropped in an existing filter in an existing facility for reuse. It was not designed, sized to really meet the need. We're in the process now of procuring one that can change the cross-flow rates and see if we can get more scouring. However, we're also chasing a new tech concept, which is to eliminate some of the chemicals that are being used upstream. Turns out about 90% of the chemical is being caught up on the filters. It's chemicals that we're adding to try and take actinides out. Turns out we're not seeing the actinide removal with the chemical. So if we can eliminate the chemical, we might be able to get right out of straight filtration. So those are the kinds of things we do, is look for what's the next bottleneck, give that demo, we pass that information on to Parsons and see if that's something that they want to be thinking about. It's proven out to be pretty successful. Enhanced low activity waste disposition, that's a fancy way of saying we need a lot more capacity in our salt stone facility. It keeps up with us just fine right now, but we run on a single shift. And we run at a fairly low rate. So there's a series of minor plant mods that need to be performed there. We've done about half of them a couple years ago, and we've got about 2 years to go, really, to finish up as we continue to improve this capability and performance. And we're learning quite a bit about what it takes to run at much higher paces. The facility only needs to run about 50% of the time. Be able to take on the full load coming off the salt waste, even at its highest capacities. So we're pretty comfortable that we can get the facility there. If you look at the R charts here, you know, it's meant to be lots of information. It really is trying to pull together all those different modifications and changes we were just talking about over the last couple of pages. If you look at the brown color up on top, that's the bar chart that comes right out of Tom's presentation. See how we fit into that. A number of our projects are completed quite a bit early as compared to the need, but we do have some things that then run in parallel further out in the future. So, for instance, I'll pick on the salt processing facility, salt stone processing facility, and the staffing needed to run it at more shifts. So salt waste processing facility is going to come up on a ramp-up curve. We've overlaid our need for staffing to try and align us so that we get trained and qualified operators on a just-in-time basis. That's all around budget, rather than having to sit here and not do anything for that ramp, it's just-in-time and qualified to ramp up the capability of that facility at the same time. Same thing with the dry feed mods. We've got some activities that are listed in there. Don't really need them to be able to get through to the 2018 time frame, but we'll need them shortly after salt waste starts to start up, because they'll slowly ramp up their capacity and we'll need to be able to keep up. One of the big ones that's down there at the bottom is we've got a need for disposal space. So the salt disposal units are laid in there.
was real obvious to appropriators and Congress and the department that you need to be in the construction phase at all times on salt disposal units. So that's really what that's going to demonstrate. You can see both the filling and the construction overlay there for the next couple of salt disposal units. That's probably the most critical issue that we've got right at the moment, is making sure that the budget comes through and can keep those construction. It's a line item construction project authorized by Congress, and so that's where you get your annual funding from, and it can dramatically upset a fixed price contract if you don't have good consistent funding. So that's one of our main messages around the way our budget plays out. So this is about tank space. So you can imagine, as you ramp up capacity and need for feed to salt waste processing facility, you need to have quite a few more tanks involved in that. This graphic is meant to illustrate what we're currently targeting. We currently, you can see tank 49, tanks 21, 23, and 35. Those are the ones that we're currently using to feed our interim system. And then as you work your way across the page, in order to be able to get up into the first year of operation, we've got to clear two more tanks. We're currently physically modifying tank 26 to make it available to us. We've not started to work on tank 27 yet. And then we've got to get 34, 28, 25 into service for the follow-on years. And you can see up in the right-hand column the annual need for salt waste processing to be able to get us in a position to free up enough tankage and be able to prep those tanks, make them available and be fully outfitted. Some of those tanks don't have usable pumps or transfer systems, and so we've got to upgrade those tanks in order to be able to put them into stock service. So that's part of the new story here. Now, one of the things you see, though, is 1.4 million gallons a year, 1.5, 1.8, 1.5. Peak performance to date with the interim system has been 1.32 million gallons. That was a really good year. We've just had a really good run, and if we can continue operating the way we did earlier this year, that should be no problem. Based on history, that is a significant challenge for that system. We're just going to have to push it hard. I'd really like to get it to be operating up into the 3 million gallon kind of design capacity, and then with a 75 or 80% availability rate, there should be no issue at all. So that's really what our target is, to get us into that kind of position over the course of the next year. So back to where I started, we really have a fully integrated flow sheet. We work hand in hand with the capital build project team to make sure that we're aligned. We do cross-fertilize an awful lot of information back and forth, both our historical and production numbers, as well as taking new ideas off of Tom. They got a great engineering team there. We're working hand in hand all the time to get together with them. And I think what this would tell you is, at our current budget profile and capability to perform, we can get to the point of meeting the need for the startup in the late 2018 timeframe. So I think we are fully aligned at this stage of the game. And that really brings me up. So we're glad to.
I have one or two.
Yeah, okay.
The next generation solvent work, I think, includes the original solvent of Alkalix too, sort of as a mixture.
When we converted from Bob Calix to Max Calix, we did not completely empty out the system. So there is a percentage of the Bob Calix that was in there. And over time, you know, you keep topping up solvent as you're using it up at a very slow pace. That just dilutes down further and further. But it was about 10% left with Bob Calix when we did the conversion. If I got that right, you did about 10% was left.
Yes, but the key thing is that you had an increase in DF. And the question is, as you've replaced it, has the DF gone up?
Well, so there's two variables at work there, Vince. One is, yes, we've slowly been diluting that over the time period. So we implemented NGS December a year ago. So so it's been in operation about 15 months.
The second piece of the variable there, though, is the longer you have a continuous run, the cleaner the system gets. So we've just had our longest run, and we actually peaked out at a little over 50,000 BF. So as we shut, so I'm currently in an outage. We're in a planned 1 month outage. When we start back up, our DF is going to fall back off again because you have a buildup in the system. That'll then feather back out again. But it's really probably the two variables working together. It's a little bit of less Bob Kalix and continuous operation.
I couldn't help but think about as you have higher throughputs, what's the status of the evaporators?
So we're having a really good run. We've had some record performance on our evaporators. We're only running two of the three that exist at the site. We've taken one out of service and currently don't plan to put it back in service. The other two are doing the job for us. We're a little over 1 million gallons this FY on the evaporator side of our business. So that's really good performance. We just had the longest run in the last 10 years with one of them, 609 days. So it's a really good performance. Currently got them down in outage. So we tend to either the system's up and running or it's down in an outage. It's an all or nothing kind of thing. We can do a little bit of work without all the facilities being up and operational, but they're so integrated these days that they really all tie together. So we've got everything down in an outage right now.
Since 49, so close to 48, how is 48 these days?
It's nice and tidy, sitting there idle. The system plan doesn't have us working on tank 48 for quite a few years. The technique that we currently believe we're going to use is I'm going to call it a copper manganate strike to burn off the organic. We're going to have to do that in very small batches. So what we'd like to do is get through with MCU operation, take the strike tanks and ARP, which are small-scale strike tanks, and be able to bring 48 over and strike it in a much smaller volume so we can control the hydrogen burst, so we can control the flammability of the chemical reaction. So it's currently several years off into the future. It's also a fairly significant investment. It's somewhere around a $25 million plant modification in order to utilize those small strike tanks. Processing. So right now it's off into the, I think it's 2022 time frame. It's when tank 48 is currently in the system plan.
What prompted this was the need for tankage that's tied into the rest of the operation, and tank 48 sort of was just sitting there. If you had tank 48 available, all right, what kind of throughputs, because of the lines and how everything is set up?
Yeah, if you go back to the...
Right there.
We could, you could replace one of these tanks with tank 48 if we could make it available right now. So it's just a matter of, when can you do that? When can you do the plant mod? When are the strike tanks available? And then how long can you take to burn it off? And we'd be burning it off in a couple thousand gallon batches. It's about a quarter million gallons of weight. So quite a bit of time is going to be consumed with getting rid of the contents.
I understand that, but I'm thinking that, one alternative might be to justify in parallel to try, if you had the funds, yeah, and the personnel to try and improve the flow sheet here. And I was wondering if anything had been done in terms.
Yeah, we took a good hard look at that about a year ago, coming off the back of the significant budget reduction. We looked long and hard at what could we do to improve our performance, be able to solve some of the bottlenecking issues. And 48 was one of the ones we looked at really hard, and in the end discarded it just because of the budget constraint and the need for a facility that we currently have fully utilized. So we tabled that one, and we took on a couple of others that are fairly significant for us. You've heard us talk about double stack before, so we've eliminated the need for a glass waste storage building, at least in the near term. We're going to be able to double stack canisters so that we don't have that capital line item. That's about $130 million off the docket. We've come up with a couple other techniques like that to solve some of our waste disposition issues. SDU 6, for instance, currently run about 2 years ahead of its need date, so that we eliminate the bottlenecking that's restraining some of the operations that Shelley Wilson was actually talking about a little bit earlier. So we're trying to open up some capability to increase production even at current budget levels. So we tabled that one. We looked at it really hard about a year and a half ago.
Thank you.
Okay, Stuart. Hello. You don't talk quite as fast as Tom, but it's hard for me to keep up with you, too. So I want to make sure I understand this. You said you had the funding you needed for next year. I assume that's the funding in the FY16 budget.
Yeah, I assume that it comes through as it's currently at the president's level.
And then you will need an additional $20 million for FY17 to get...
It actually drops back off again. There's a little bit of a peak next year at the $20 million mark, and then it drops back down to about 50.
So then my question is, I think I heard you say that the disposal vaults are your most critical item at this point. What is the long pole intent? The salt waste vaults are, seems to me, just me, like you have a lot of DWPF mods and they might be tougher to do.
The plant modifications for DWPF are fairly small scale compared to a large scale. That's about $100 million to build a salt disposal unit. And if you want to be able to run the facilities at their full capacity when salt waste processing comes up, you've got to have one empty and ready to receive waste at any given moment in time. So the small scale things that we're doing inside the operating plants today, it's a little bit here and a little bit there. It tallies up to the $60 million number, so about a $15 million per year spend, a little bit of a peak next year. But the bottom line is you've always got to have one of these big SDUs up and running as a line item. You'll have a break. You'll fill it. You're going to fill one of those every 2 years.
So you're thinking budget constraints. How about technical? Are the technical changes in DWPF? You understand how they're going to do, how it works,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff?
We've got, those are well understood flow sheet changes that have gone through a lot of testing and preparation. Yeah, so it's just the physical modification and then the implementation with the safety basis. We'll be able to get those up online. So, yeah, that's one of the nice things about this particular flow sheet is even though we're making changes, it's well understood, well known, pretty easy to implement.
You get as much money as you ask for in FY16, and you get $15 million in 17, you're ready to go. Ooh, that's good.
Other questions? Thank you all. Thank both of you very much.
Appreciate this presentation. The next speaker is Dr. Mikulski, who's the Savannah River National Lab Director. He's doing his annual update. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Karen. I'm Terry Mikulski, Director of the Savannah River National Lab. I want to start by apologizing for having to skip the invitation in January, but glad you invited me back.
It's fine.
And I'll try and make this as efficient as I can and just give you an update on where we are in the lab. So since the last time we met with you, we celebrated our 10th anniversary as a national laboratory. And if you serve a free lunch, some really interesting people will show up. But it's
money.
What's that?
Hopefully with money.
Well, I'll show you about money in a minute. But but what's important, I think, is that this has moved from a technical center to truly a national laboratory. And that's the important part for the region, for the state, and for the country. Now, this is just kind of a picture of where we are. Last year, we hired 80 new people. So we are on a growth curve right now. We executed just over $200 million last year. We're looking at about a 10 to 12% projected revenue growth this year. And you can see in the pie chart, We're pretty evenly divided between the work we do for the environmental, national environmental cleanup mission and what we do in a